And we're joined once again today on The Scoop by Justin Jett of Def Pen Hoops, taking a look at some NBA storylines that have unfolded here throughout the week. Justin, as always, glad to have you on the show. Happy Friday.
Thank you. Happy Friday to you as well.
It was a big week for the Minnesota Timberwolves as they ended the Tom Thibodeau era and are now going in a new direction. Thibodeau was fired after Sunday's win over the Lakers, which seemed like weird timing, to say the least. But nonetheless, Ryan Saunders getting a chance to come in and coach the rest of the season, and maybe after that, depending on how things play out. As somebody who I'm sure has maybe followed the Timberwolves a little more since we started our segment, but mostly from an outside perspective, what was your reaction come Monday to learn the news that Thibodeau had been relieved of his duties?
The timing was obviously surprising after that big win, but we really haven't heard anything about a potential firing. Usually we get some rumbles of it before it occurs, but I think it ultimately was the right decision. Thibodeau is kind of an old school coach. Obviously, the culture wasn't so great there. And truthfully, what an NBA coach is there for is to create culture more than anything. If you have the talent, you really just need the culture and the chemistry to make it work. Aside from that, talent is the most important thing in the NBA. And there's no doubt that Timberwolves have that. And beside them having that, they still weren't doing well. And so we know how much Thibodeau plays his guys. We know what the culture's been like this season, and you saw for that first win, big win, the players just pummeling their new coach in celebration, Ryan Saunders, and it looks to be at least the first game for a nice fresh start for them.
Yeah, and it's such a fun angle too, because obviously Saunders, the son of the late Flip Saunders, who coached the Timberwolves a couple of different stints, he was heavily involved in this franchise since he came to the Wolves, then left, and then came back. So obviously he has had his fingerprints all over this franchise. And then for his son to be able to get a chance to lead the team, I think is really cool. You saw the celebration afterwards, and he did get a little emotional as well in some interviews just with talking about how proud his dad would have been. So obviously it kind of tugs at the emotions a little bit. Now that this situation is resolved, do you think the way the Wolves are playing right now that they can do enough with this move to be able to get back into the playoff push in the Western Conference?
It's going to be tough. Obviously, the West is incredible right now, and breaking into the Elite Eight, is going to be hard. The Spurs are playing just so much better than anyone could have predicted. They are not shooting a lot of threes. They're actually shooting the least amount of threes in the NBA, but they're shooting over 40% from three-point range. That's absurd. So I'm not sure that that's going to last. It doesn't make much sense that a team that shoots that many mid-range shots could be this successful, especially offensively, in the NBA. But the Spurs are the Spurs. Pop is just an amazing coach, probably the best coach of all time. And so it's not going to be easy to break in. But the Timberwolves have a lot of talent. And I really think Dario Saric is the perfect four to go next to Karl-Anthony Towns. I think once that shot gets all the way back, it's going to just prove itself even more. But I know that those two have just great minutes together. Their plus minus is really high when those two are on the court. So that's encouraging. Obviously, Covington's injured, but this team could do it. They have the talent. Karl-Anthony Towns is that good. It's just they have 10 other teams in front of them that they have to beat out.
And it may not matter anyway, because it sounds like we're getting closer and closer to the return of DeMarcus Cousins, and it looks as though he's going to make his season debut on January 18th against the Clippers. This move was met with a lot of reaction on both sides of the aisle by Warriors fans, non-Warriors fans, and now it looks like we'll finally see the debut of Cousins next week. What does he bring to this Warriors team, considering that the Golden State at this point 27-14, they're starting to play better here recently after a tough stretch. But what exactly can he do to bring them to that next level, considering what injury he's been through and just the kind of player that he is?
So he's obviously going to improve them. They have had center quotation marks issues for the last few years. It doesn't really matter when you have the team that they do, but even 40% of the Marcus Cousins is better than what they've had in their recent history. He is not the best defender. He is lackadaisical. He can be kind of aloof. He is offensively dominant, however, and it'll be really, really interesting to see how he fits on this team and how they're going to use him. I expect a lot of high post work. I expect a lot of maybe 4-5 pick and rolls. They might put him in the corner because he can shoot a little bit from outside. And he's going to improve their passing, as he's a pretty good passing big man, if not slightly delayed. The only issue, and the one that literally the entire league is holding their hat on, is that Achilles injuries are incredibly difficult to come back from. They are the most difficult injury in sports at the moment. It is hard to find a case where a player had a difficult Achilles injury and came back ever. So that is the one thing that could hold him back and hold the Warriors back from really succeeding with him. But like I said, even 40% is probably better than what they have now and what they have had. So it's going to be really interesting.
Justin, we've seen a couple of fantastic games here over the last week. The one I want to start with first is the absolute score fest that we saw between the San Antonio Spurs and the Oklahoma City Thunder. And it's always a situation where you see games like this and you think, man, that would be great as a playoff series when we get to that point. 56 points for LaMarcus Aldridge, did not attempt a three-pointer, but it's just a crazy game between these two teams last night. What was your reaction to seeing that score, and if you had a chance to catch any of it, the action between both teams?
Yeah, it was a pretty fun game. You don't see many 154 to 147s anywhere in sports, so it's really fun when you see that number up there. LaMarcus Aldridge does this every once in a while, where he just can't miss from mid-range and is scoring insanely well. He did it a few years ago in the playoffs, obviously against the Rockets, where he just basically dominated that series. But then on the other side, Russell Westbrook had 24 assists. That is a unbelievable number. He is still not shooting well from the field. He went 50% from the field in this game, but he was 0-for-4 from 3. He is 2-for-5 from the free throw line. Fun little tidbit, actually. He is shooting, Russell Westbrook is shooting worse from the free throw line than Clint Capela this year.
Wow.
Unbelievable. His shooting in all aspects has been down this season. I said this before on Twitter, if he can even be a proficient shooter, the Thunder team is going to be really scary, because we know Paul George is playing at an MVP caliber level. We know that defense is legit, despite the 154 that was hung on him in last night's game. So it was a really interesting game, because as I said, the Spurs are an incredible case of, we don't shoot that many threes, but the ones we do, we shoot really well. They went 16-for-19 last night. And then the Thunder, on the other side, they don't have spectacular shooting either, but they have the defense, they have the two stars, they have switchy perimeter guys, and they have the traditional center down low. So like you said, that was a really fun matchup. What did you see out there?
It was very just amazing to watch these two teams. And this Spurs team in particular, I know I think at the beginning of the year, I had made comments to the effect of, it's going to be tough for the Spurs to get back into this. They don't have the talent as in years past, and I'm eating my words, because they find a way to get the win. And I mean, sign me up for a 7-game series between those two teams. Obviously wouldn't get as many points between the two as we did, but hey, if those games are even half as good as that game was last night, just so much back and forth. I mean, Spurs led early, Thunder make a run, and just back and forth, and sign me up for more of that if we have a way to make it happen.
Definitely.
Justin, another one I wanted to ask you about is the state of the Los Angeles Lakers. And I think we've touched on this a couple of times, but LeBron missing games due to injury. The team right now is at 23-19. So obviously with them being the Lakers, the expectations are that they'll be better than they are. But is this Lakers team underachieving, or are they right at about where they should be, considering that LeBron has missed some time and they don't really have that number two go-to player behind King James?
Yeah, I think this is about where you can expect them without LeBron. The team around him is not very good, and it was hidden in the offseason what a kind of truly terrible offseason they had, aside from signing LeBron James. LeBron James covers a lot of alts, and that team was put together very strangely with these weird big name reserve players, not much shooting, and the really young Kyle Kuzma does things like he did last night where he goes off for a crazy amount of points, but he's a little bit a one-trick pony in that way. He's pretty much just a scorer. Brandon Ingram, I still have some belief in. I think he could be a pretty good passer in the NBA. It's going to be interesting to see if he is allowed to become that with LeBron James next to him. He's only 21 years old. And Lonzo is not yet very good at all. So this is about where you can expect him to be with the players that were put onto this roster and the players that were kept onto this roster. I said a couple weeks ago that I would much rather have D'Angelo Russell and Julius Randle right now than Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram. And it's just those little decisions that really make or break a team. And while Brandon Ingram could still be great, and like I said, I still have faith in him, Lonzo Ball has instincts on the basketball court. Right now, it just doesn't look like they made the right decisions. And we'll see this offseason, because really they're going to be looking for this offseason to really make a big move and become that championship contender that LeBron is used to being.
Justin, I want to also ask you, a team that is, at least maybe from my part of the country, is seeming to fly under the radar as well. The Indiana Pacers, 27-14. They're currently in the third spot in the Eastern Conference. And with the Pacers, you get a healthy dose of Victor Oladipo, but it would appear that his supporting cast has really been helping him out as well, with the fact that they're 13 games over 500.
Yeah, definitely. After I had decided that Miles Turner was not a good player, he decided to become an awesome player. So that was incredible timing for me as an analyst, but he has been great this year. Defensively, he's gone up another level, which is pretty outstanding because he's already an amazing defender. He's starting to hit shots from mid-range. He's starting to hit shots from three. He has actually been almost the focal point of that team. Victor Oladipo is not having that good of a year. He's shooting just 43% from the field, 34% from three, has an effective field goal percentage under 50%. He's not doing as well as he did last year. It's really the guys like Miles Turner, who's had a big year, Domantas Sabonis, who I love, who's shooting 62% from the field right now. And grabbing boards and assisting. Having those two big guys specifically and being able to run pick and rolls with those two guys for the entirety of an NBA game has been huge for them. And it has really been the main reason they've been this good. Bogdanovic is playing well, in addition, shooting about 44% from three-point range, I believe. And that team is really interesting. They're a really fun team. They're a team that I wasn't so sure they were going to be doing as well as they were, but then Miles Turner took that turn that I didn't think he could, and they've been a lot of fun.
Let's talk a little Nikola Jokic as well, one of the better young bigs in the league, and he had the full court lob pass in the Nuggets' most recent game that ended up going for a quick fast break bucket. Jokic, where can he get to? Where does his potential? Where can it lead him amongst the top players in the league if he continues to produce at the level he is right now?
I mean, it could be right up there. He, I believe, is the most talented passing big man probably ever. And he rebounds well. He shoots proficiently. He needs to improve his three-point shooting. He's not shooting as well as he did last season from three. But that could be turned around easy. I think he's a really good shooter, and this is just a little bit of a dip because teams are probably playing a little more tight on the three-point line than they used to. He actually cares on defense. He is not a jumper. He's not a real athletic man, as we all know, but he cares on defense. He's tall. He's lengthy. And that matters on the defensive end in the NBA. If you're on an NBA court, chances are you can be decent at defense if you care, and he cares. And he's averaging 19, 10, and 7 right now, almost 8 assists per game. On 50% shooting with an effective field goal percentage of 54%. He is having an amazing season, and the Nuggets record shows it because some of the other players on the team aren't doing so well, namely Jamal Murray. So he could be right among the best players in the league, and he probably is right among the best players in the league right now.
Justin, as we kind of wind things down here for today's segment, we'll go to who's flying and who's dying, as we will typically end things with. Let's start with some teams that are red hot and are making some noise in the standings or are solidifying themselves with their performance and maybe moving their way towards the top of the standings or just improving their lead over everybody else. Who are some teams over the last week or so that have been flying high?
Well, the Celtics are starting to figure it out a little bit. We saw that little argument on the bench between Jaylen Brown, and that can happen during the course of an NBA game, but they're starting to figure it out a little bit. Al Horford's having his defensive moments, his moments where he looks really good again. Kyrie Irving is having the best season of his career, and now the periphery guys are starting to kind of figure out that the roles they have are the roles they have. And despite them wanting more minutes, they are just trying hard in the minutes that they do have. And so they're creeping around. They're starting to look at least a little bit like the team that they should be. That would be the main one. And then the Bucks, as always, I love that team. I think they are amazing. Giannis is doing just stupid, incredible things right now. So that team is just going to keep improving its lead on the East and has been playing really well.
What about a couple teams that are dying? I mean, you look at the bottom of the standings in the Eastern Conference. Cavaliers, they've lost 11 games in a row. The Knicks are 1-9 in their last 10. So obviously those bottom feeders not really doing much. Any other teams that have been falling off here over the last handful of games?
Yeah, the Clippers are kind of falling back to earth a little bit. They can't really figure out the rotation. Doc is playing Avery Bradley still almost 30 minutes per game, despite him shooting 37% from the field. So that's not so great. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, he is still doing well, if not tentative. He doesn't like shooting so much. He is having trouble really finding his role in the team with so many guards and so many players that are capable. And Lou Williams' numbers have dropped just a tad. His percentages have dropped just a little bit. He's feeling the pressure, I think, of really being that number one option. I think they'll still make the playoffs. They'll still find their way in the playoffs. They're just too deep to not. But right now, they haven't really figured out who they need to play, for how long, and what the offense needs to be. Every single shot right now for them is really, really difficult. And so we'll see over the next few weeks if they're able to figure out, or if they're going to be one of those teams that we talked about that Timberwolves could potentially jump if they were to make the playoffs.
There we go. Justin, in closing, before we let you go, I know you teased a couple of pieces that you're working on, including just our basic understanding of how we value the three-pointer. I know that was one that you mentioned you were working on. Any other stories that'll be coming down the pipe here soon, or that listeners should be looking out for?
Yeah, so Monday, my piece on how we look at three-point shooting will drop, and then I'm hoping to speak to a former All-Star and probable current All-Star this Monday as well, and drop a piece a week or so after that. So those are my next two.
Ooh, I love that foreshadowing. We'll keep an eye out for those. Appreciate the time as always, Justin. A lot of fun to take a look at the NBA in a broader scale. Enjoy the games this weekend. I'm sure plenty of good ones to choose from, and we'll break things down with you again next week.
Sounds good. You too.